Hi, everybody. My name is Francis, and I am a grateful, grateful member of Al-Anon. And we have a term for people who are not in Al-Anon, but really might benefit from being here. We call them alligators. And I want to just let you know that if you are a sober member of AA, you qualify for Al-Anon. Because you're surrounded by alcoholics. Now you know. I really want to thank Michelle and the whole committee for having me here. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and it is just an honor to be here tonight. And if you're wondering, everything they say about Portland is true. We have locally sourced organic donuts, which cost an exorbitant amount of money. People actually do care where the chicken was raised in their poultry dishes. I want to let you know, though, that I was actually born in Mountain View, California. And I was actually raised for a few years after I was born in Mountain View in San Jose, California. And what's very, very interesting is being here tonight, and I may get a little emotional. This is not the first time I've attended an Al-Anon meeting in San Jose. When I was a little girl, 2 or 3 years old, the first time I went to an Al-Anon meeting was with my mother. So I feel like I'm coming home, that this is full circle for me. And I can incorporate that a little bit into my story. And what I hope to do tonight is just talk about what happened, what it was like, and what it's like today, and share my experience, strength, and hope. And I'll start off by saying that when my mom was pregnant with me, I experienced my first Al-Anon moment, and that was because my dad decided to grow marijuana plants in the apartment complex we were living in and got us kicked out. So that was my first experience with unmanageability in the womb. So I've needed to be here since day one, and I'm so glad that I found these rooms. I was told that the theme of this conference was the joy of living. And so I had a great moment to put this into practice the very day I was told. I was upstairs in the bathroom, and as happens with married couples or longtime partnered couples, my wife came into the bathroom to use the bathroom, as we do sometimes. And I look in the mirror, and I notice it seemed like she's using an awful lot of toilet paper. And I look and I say, "Do you really need that much toilet paper?" And it occurred to me at that moment that the joy of living does not have to do with monitoring how much toilet paper your spouse is using. So for me, my unmanageability comes out in various ways. It can be something as big as a political election, it can be an alcoholic who's in my home, and it can be toilet paper. So I just want to let you know today that if you are pursuing the joy of living, please do not monitor how much toilet paper your loved ones are using. It'll just bring misery. For me, the story of my joy of living really has to do with choices. And Al-Anon has given me choices today. Prior to being in Al-Anon, I felt utterly enslaved by the world. I felt enslaved by what you thought of me. I felt enslaved by my parents and their familial legacies. And most of all, I felt enslaved by my own feelings and my own thoughts. When I first came in, I was dating, I had a girlfriend who I was worried drank a little bit too much. And I decided that if I went to Al-Anon, I could help her to not drink so much. A lot of us have this idea when we come into the rooms. Now, prior to being involved with her, I grew up in an alcoholic home. And in that home, I experienced all the garden variety types of abuses that a lot of us in those kind of homes experience. And I'm not going to go into too many details about that stuff, but what I will say is that from the get-go, I experienced a sense of needing to control. I wanted to make everything okay. And someone earlier today in one of the workshops was talking about being an only kid and that need to kind of fix everything, to make everything okay, to have a little bit of a God complex. And for me, that came out in a lot of ways. Lying, manipulating, trying to be good, trying to be bad, various kinds of things that I hoped would work, and sometimes they did. I can remember very clearly being a little girl and bringing to one of my parents a little concoction I made, and I think I had put in it like meat tenderizer and sage and sugar and just crazy stuff because I thought that this drink would make my parent better. I thought it would make everything okay. And I remember one of my parents asking me, well, you know, why does God do this to me? And my answer was, well, you're being tested. I was 7 years old. You know, you cannot answer these questions when you're 7 years old. I'm 39 and I can't answer this question, you know? So I was in a position where I had to become the adult pretty quick. And I missed out on a few things. The coping skill that I took on in terms of trying to be everything to everyone so that it would be okay, I carried into school. I remember telling people that, this was a good one, I told people at school that my church had burned down. At the time, I didn't even go to church, and that I was raising money to have the church rebuilt because it was giving me attention. It was putting the focus on me. And I needed that focus on me because I couldn't deal with what was happening at home. At home, I was scared. At home, the police came. And at home, I cried a lot. And I didn't want to keep crying. By the way, will someone give me a timer when we have like 5 minutes? Thank you. So I developed these coping skills. And manipulation was another one of, let me be who you want me to be. And a lot of that had to do with growing up in an alcoholic home, making sure that everything would be okay. But I think some of it had to do, honestly, I knew when I was 4 years old, and the Dukes of Hazzard, if any of you are old enough to remember that show, the Dukes of Hazzard was a show, and I had such a crush on Daisy Duke. Oh. I wanted to beat up Boss Hogg for her. And I knew even then that I wasn't quite like some of the other girls. And so there were a lot of coping skills that I developed, that manipulation, let me be who you want me to be. They call it a social chameleon in a lot of circles. And I took that coping skill with me into my relationships. And that's where this particular relationship with this woman led me, where all the ways I was trying to be for her so she wouldn't drink wasn't working. I tried to be angry. Well, actually, I didn't try. I was angry. I was angry. I tried to be sweet. I tried to be quiet. I remember one time we were in the car, and she was yelling at me because I wasn't where I was supposed to be in the grocery store. I don't know. It was just, you know, lesbian drama. And I remember sitting in the car looking out the window thinking, if I could just stop talking, if I could just stop being myself and be however I should be so that she will stop yelling at me, everything will be okay. So I came into the rooms of Al-Anon thinking that I could control this situation, that I could make her stop drinking, that we would have happily ever after, and she would no longer yell at me for not meeting her in the right place in the grocery store. And what happened was I came into that room, and the first thing I heard was laughter. And nothing was funny. I didn't know why people were laughing. I just thought it was awful, actually. But they were laughing, and they were laughing about things that seemed really awful to me. And even though my attitude at the time was not favorable, I wanted something from that. I wanted to be able to laugh. When I came back again, I was able to listen just a little bit and stop judging. By the way, is my hair big enough? I just want to make sure, being at a LGBT conference, okay, thank you. What I was able to hear was that it wasn't about her, that there was not much I could do for her, that I needed to focus on myself. And you could have spoke a dead language at that point, because I had no idea what that meant, taking care of myself, putting the focus on me. I had heard from other places that I have been that my problem was that I thought about myself too much, and I needed to stop doing that. The nice thing is Al-Anon has provided nuanced thinking for me, and I have learned that I can focus on myself without being selfish and self-focused, that I can see what's going on with me, and it doesn't mean everybody else has to kowtow to it. For me, self-care has been the backbone of this program. And the choices that I've had in terms of practicing self-care has been the work. And that, thank God, is where the steps of this program come in. And going to meetings and reading the literature. All of those things, though, are choices I've had to make over the years, over the 16 years I've been around these rooms. And I'm a really slow learner, so I just want to let you know that if you've been in Al-Anon for a while and you feel like, excuse me, you feel like you're not getting a concept, or you're having a struggle with a higher power, or the fourth step seems scary, or that the alcoholics in your life will just never shut up, you're not alone. My first few years in Al-Anon, I didn't really work any steps. I went to a Monday night meeting, and I sat in those rooms, and despite the fact that I'd go to the meeting and I'd hear things and, you know, I'd agree and it'd sound really good, I was still struggling with other things in my life. And those particular things took some time from being fully focused and really falling way into Al-Anon. And I had to spend some time and deal with those other things. When I came out of that and I was able to refocus on Al-Anon, I was on the first step for a really, really long time. I did not fundamentally understand that I could not control other people, places, and things. I could not control the alcoholic. I thought that, for instance, with one of my parents, I thought that if I could just learn enough of a certain fact of the whatever it was we were talking about, whether it was we were talking about a movie star, Natalie Wood's death, or we were talking about, I don't know if any of you are old enough to know who she was. It was conspiratorial. But learning as much as I could about that, or learning as much as I could about a politician, whatever it was, if I could just hold my mom's interest enough. Whoops, I meant to say my parent. Sorry. If I could just hold this person's interest long enough that they would also start treating me differently, that I would have the parent that I had always dreamed of. And what wound up happening as I started working the steps and I started realizing that my life was unmanageable and that no matter how right I was about anything with this person or anyone else, it didn't make up for the fact that this person was still not doing things I wanted them to do. I had to learn very quickly that I am not God. I am not the God of other people. When I want them to make me their God, we're in trouble. When I want you to use a certain amount of toilet paper, when I want you to vote a certain way, when I want you to stop drinking as much as you're drinking, when I want you to say the things I want to hear and to do the things I want to do, I am trying to be your higher power. And it never has worked out for me. I've also learned on the flip side that when you do something and I think you're really cool, or I want you to never leave me, or because, you know, I do mafia love. Once you're in the circle, you don't leave the circle. I've learned in Al-Anon not to take hostages. When you need to stop drinking for me, when you need to stop doing whatever that thing is you're doing so that I can be happy, you are my higher power. And that also never seems to work. So once I began to realize that I was putting either myself in a position of being a higher power or making other people my higher power, and it was still making my life completely miserable, I had to find a power greater than myself. And the journey for me in terms of emotional sobriety really centers on having faith. And I will tell you that one of my nicknames in my family is Lady Spock, because if it is not logical, if I can't put it in a box and understand it, and this goes with that, and that goes with this, and these go together, and it can be kind of, you know, sideways, but eventually they have to meet up. If that's not happening, I literally do not understand. I still have that sometimes. And for me to have faith in something that I have perceived that I cannot see, touch, smell, has been such a challenge, because I want it to be tangible. I want to know, you know? I don't want to just believe. I want to know. I want proof. And so I spent a number of years in these rooms being what I would call a spiritual agnostic. And I would practice praying and practice other things, the second and third steps. But, you know, the belief part really has taken a long time. And I said to someone earlier today, you know, my honest answer to certain things in my spiritual life is, do I know? No. Do I believe? Yes. And I can tell you why it's a little bit easier to believe now. It's a little bit easier to believe now because I believe every time we walk into the rooms of recovery, and particularly for me, every time I walk into an Al-Anon meeting, I am taking a small leap of faith. I'm saying, perhaps in this meeting, I will hear something that I need to hear, and I will come away being a little bit more myself, who my higher power, whatever that may be, means for me to be. And so if I can keep doing that with Al-Anon, I can keep doing that with a higher power. But the nice thing about Al-Anon is there's no rules here. You're not expected to come in and just get on in there and to get the sponsor and do it right and work the steps, because otherwise you're gonna die. And it's not, you know, we could. I've been in many a meeting where I've felt suicidal, where I wanted off the planet, where I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But I made it through to the end of the meeting, and I managed to walk out, and I managed to see, okay, I still have a roof over my head, and right now I don't have anybody drunk and crazy in my house in the moment, so I think I'm gonna be okay. So getting that faith has been a really integral part of my recovery. But also getting honest. Getting honest has, for me, been the action. And I literally have to tell on myself at least a couple times a week. I had to tell on myself a couple weeks ago when I was at dinner with some of my ladies. And, okay, so, you know, in Portland, it's kind of a thing, like, you definitely want to be cool and have your organic, free range, whatever going on. And I still, it's like random, I don't know why, but I was talking about having this chicken, and I had said, I paid $16 for a chicken. I paid $10 for the chicken. Because, you know, apparently I needed my alcoholic friend to think that I was willing to pay ridiculous amounts of money for a chicken? So I had to call her later and say, you know, I paid $10 for that chicken. And she said, thank you. I don't know if I could have done that. But for me, it's like the analogy is a rock in the backpack. I can feel it in there. And when I don't practice the honesty of self-care, when I lie, when I manipulate, when I edge out the truth just a little bit, what I'm telling myself is that I am not enough. What I am telling myself is that I do not deserve, as I am, to have all the beauty of the world come to me at that very moment, that I don't deserve to be intimate with you, just as I am. Because alcoholism to me is a family disease, and it's a disease of relationships. It's a disease for people who have intimacy issues. And so when I deny my truth, and I don't look you in the eye, and I don't say what's really happening, and I hide, I'm not in action. Action has to do with telling the truth. It really is something that's almost physical. And then I have to talk about it with somebody, right? So for me, I am blessed because I have my Al-Anon sponsor works at our AIS office, and if you're new, AIS office is Al-Anon Information Service. And that's kind of the hub of where you can get your books and you can find out about meetings and different things like that. And so sometimes I'll call her and she'll be at the AIS office and I'll just be like, I need to talk to you. And she's like, I'm volunteering, I'm doing my service work for Al-Anon right now. I'll call you later. She practices good boundaries with me. I go, okay, all right. And then we talk later, or talk to other people in the program. And the reason why the talking is really important is it's a confirmation that says, yeah, I did something I'm not proud of. I didn't practice self-care. I told a lie. I broke a boundary. I was deceitful, whatever the thing may be. And when I say what's going on to somebody, I am confirming, I'm reconfirming to myself that I deserve to let it out, that I have a right to be fully myself, and that means the mistakes. For me, I've learned that, you know, in the seventh step, it talks about having humbly removing our shortcomings. Well, humbly removing our shortcomings doesn't mean that they're totally taken away. At least for me, that's not the case. It's kind of like a kid with a toy. You know, you take the toy and you put it over here. And the kids can still pick up the toy. You know, I can still pick up manipulation. I can still pick up nagging easily. But I can humbly say for just a moment, with all that I am, this is what happened. And that it doesn't mean I'm a bad person. No one has to die. I'm not responsible for the Civil War, whatever the guilt thing might be. That just for this moment, it can be removed. And so by doing the fifth step, I'm getting myself in that frame of mind. Making amends is very interesting in Al-Anon because I think for people in other programs, you can point sometimes to very particular things. Oh, I'm sorry, I stole your car and then totaled it and on a tree and, you know, whatever. I feel like in Al-Anon, it can be a little bit more nuanced, you know, like, I'm sorry I screamed at you at that party in the bathroom. I'm sorry that I threw a dish, you know, at you because I was really angry. Just, you know, I don't know about you guys, but for me, I get really pissed when people don't do what I want. And nothing enrages me more than when I feel like I'm not getting my way. And particularly with alcoholics, I just want you to behave, really. And so being able to come to the person in a mind, in a mindset saying, for me, no, I'm not higher power. Yes, I believe there might be something that's higher power, and I'm not it. I've already talked to somebody else about this. I already see what my part is. And coming to the person with not a sense of groveling, with not a sense of just easily saying, I'm sorry, and not with a sense of shame, because that was a big one for me. I always felt ashamed. When I was a kid, I hated it when people came to my house because they would see what a mess it was, they would see how crazy it was. I hated myself and how I would behave. And so when I come to a person, when I'm apologizing, or excuse me, making an amends to an alcoholic or anybody in my life, I come being accountable and ready to move on. This is what my part is. This is where I'm at. Am I mothering? Yes, I was mothering. I admit I was mothering. I noticed this behavior. This is what I see, and this is what I want to do differently next time. And I can walk away and move on. The guilt thing is so luxurious, though. It's so luxurious. It's like, oh, I did this to you, and I feel really bad, and I'm just going to feel really bad. And it's just, it's delicious. It's like, It's like a very rich, organic, free-range bowl of chicken broth. With extra chicken feet. Just, oh. That's right. And what I can do instead of wallowing, is I can get to the end of the day and I can take a look at how my day went. What did I do today where I was connected to my higher power and my kind of deepest self? And where was I disconnected from my higher power? Because really when I do, you know, my defects of character typically involve how connected or disconnected I am to my higher power. And so when I see where I was the least connected, usually that's when the manipulation, the nagging, the judgment, the fear, the envy, the ego, all of those things come up. So I can take that stuff and I can live with it. I don't have to squash it down. I don't have to hurry. I don't have to like say, okay, I gotta get through all 12 steps and then the traditions and then the concepts and then I'll be perfect. that day is never gonna happen. There's no such thing. There's never gonna be a day where I graduate and say, well, I'm on the Al-Anon mountaintop now. What are your questions? That day is not coming. I will always be a learner. I will always need room to grow. And so the beauty of the 10th step is having gone through learning how to see what my part is, having gone through talking to somebody about it, having learned how to, you know, say what's happening without being ashamed of myself, I can take a look at myself on that, you know, at the end of the day and see what maybe was so great and not so great, and then I can lay my head on the pillow and move on. It's a new day. It doesn't matter what it was I did today. It really doesn't. Doesn't mean I don't have mess that I have to clean up and things that I have to do, but I don't have to sit around and feel so bad about it that I want to want off the planet. Or sometimes want, you know, my alcoholic off the planet. So coming back to the spiritual part, which really is in, I think, every step, is that I have to, in order to have that relationship where I can ask myself on a daily basis, where was I close to my higher power? Where was I away? I've had to unclutter. There was a workshop that I went to earlier today about decluttering, and I really think that that was a good way to put it, because when I wake up in the morning and the first thing I'm thinking about is you or the alcoholic or the guy who, you know, didn't, well, we're in California, the person that didn't use their turn signal, just saying. If that's the first thing that's going on in my head, and I'm going on and on and on, that is like clue number one, that like it's busy in here, you know. Particularly the alcoholics, man, it is so easy to think about them. They're so cute. But I know immediately I am not connected to my higher power. So I try to unclutter my mind. How do you unclutter your mind? Well, it's kind of a practice thing. It takes time. Because mainly I observe it, I notice it, and I try to start praying, thinking about higher power, turning my mind to other things. Having service positions in Al-Anon or doing service work in general is a great way to kind of help with the clutter, because, you know, you have other things. You have to get out of your pajamas and stop feeling sorry for yourself and go out and, you know, go do stuff. Not too much stuff. You want to practice self-care. But getting out of the house, doing that, being connected to higher power. And for me, too, part of decluttering is also I don't pay much attention anymore to, like, the news and to, like, really depressing, weird things, politics. I don't watch much TV, all of that stuff. I lead a pretty quiet life. And if you had, you know, told me when I first got into these rooms, you know, well, what do you like to do on a Saturday night? And I'm like, I like to go to bed at 9. I wouldn't have believed it. But it's actually fun, believe it or not. Because when you go to bed at 9 at night and you're not laying next to somebody who's totally drunk and it's like 2 in the morning and you're cleaning up their vomit, or maybe you're even cleaning up your own or whatever's going on, it really becomes, the joy of living becomes serenity. And that peace and that quiet and the knowing that right here, right now, in this very moment, I have everything I need. Another big piece, there's a wonderful pamphlet, if you haven't seen it, it's called Detachment. I love this pamphlet. I love it, love it. I have used it so many times. And the detachment, we talk about detaching with love. And sometimes I hear alcoholics go, oh, detach, that's like so cold, and it's not about that. It's about taking the space to just say, right now, I just need to be with myself and my thoughts, my sponsor, my higher power, and not think about you for like 2 minutes. just two, and do what I need to do. And what's crazy is it changes people. When we are the example and we show that we're practicing that self-care, that we're detaching, but we still care, but we're taking that space, I don't know, it's like magic. People change. They start wanting to do it too. Suddenly you hear, well, I have my boundaries. Okay. And then I'm like, oh, you have your boundaries? You know. And then the last thing is that I take direction. And there was an acronym workshop today, and some people have God as good orderly direction. I never liked that because I like to be rebellious. So that, you know, that was a little bit not my thing. But I take direction in the sense that Al-Anon provides me very clear direction with the steps. When I practice those 12 steps, not because it's going to make me perfect, not because it's even going to make me nice, not because it's going to make people like me, not because it's going to make my hair bigger, well, maybe a little. When I do that work, the direction seems to come. When I keep coming back to the rooms, the direction seems to come. And it will be as simple as being in a meeting and hearing somebody say the very thing that's going on with me. It may be being in a conversation with another Al-Anon member and them opening themselves up to me, and I see that, oh, I can open up too. I can be totally where I'm at. I don't have to be ashamed anymore. I don't have to hide myself. I don't have to hide booze bottles. I don't have to make you like me. I can just be here. What I want to close with is I want to say that I think for a lot of us, especially those of us who have grown up LGBTQ, that the God thing has been an issue for a lot of us. And what I want to say is that if you're struggling with the higher power stuff or you're struggling with getting into a practice, I feel like I've really had to change my thinking about certain things. For instance, what prayer is, or what meditation is, or even what self is, or what good is, or what bad is. A lot of the things now that I hear in the spiritual practice that I had heard maybe 30 years ago, because I believe we see things not as they are, but we see things as we are. Because I'm learning, thanks to Al-Anon, with a new way of being, when I listen to words from spiritual people, and I listen to people from all over the place, I hear things differently now. When I hear about hell, I think about the hell of alcoholism. When I think about heaven, I think about the joy of living. And so what I'll close with is that I was having a moment about 3 or 4 months ago, and I was incorporating a new spiritual practice into my life. Because again, it's one of those things that we never get perfect at. It's always a journey. And I prayed. I just said, okay, how do I pray? Because I didn't really know. I'd always thought it was you say words, and then you kind of wish for stuff, really. And then probably you don't get it. And that's what I thought prayer was for a long time. But I said, you know, tell me, show me something. And what I got back, and I'm not one of those people who like thinks God talks to them. I don't have like, you know, a telephone line to God or anything like that. But I heard very distinctly somewhere in there, I got the message, prayer is self-care. And when I am dealing with alcoholics, or when I am dealing with drivers, or when I am dealing with the grocery store clerk, or when I am dealing with my parents, it doesn't matter who I'm dealing with, when I'm even dealing with myself and my own shame and hurt, that every time I practice self-care, you know, eating, not starving myself, flossing, that's a big Al-Anon practice for me, actually, flossing. When I do the things that I need to do, taking the time to have a spiritual practice, all of those things, when I do that, I am in prayer. And when I come to a meeting, when I'm here with you, and I can look into your eyes and be fully myself, I am in prayer. So I want to thank all of you tonight for joining me in this prayer. Thank you.